Arthur Henry's commentary on Numbers 14, the murmuring of the Israelites. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation said to them, "Would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return to Egypt?" And they said one to another, "Let us make a captain, and let us return to Egypt." Here we see what mischief the evil spies made by the unfair representation. We may suppose that these 12 that were impaneled to inquire concerning Canaan had talked it over among themselves before they brought in their report in public. And Caleb and Joshua, it is likely, had done their utmost to bring the rest over to be of their mind. And if they would have but agreed that Caleb, according to his position, should have spoken for them all as their foreman, all had been well. But the evil spies, it should seem, willfully designed to raise his mutiny, purely in opposition to Moses and Aaron, though they could not propose any advantage to themselves by it unless they hoped to be captains and commanders of the retreat into Egypt. They were now meditating, but what came of it? Here in these verses we find those whom they studied to humor put into vexation, and before the end of the chapter brought to ruin. So observe, number one, how the people fretted themselves. They lifted up their voices and cried, verse 1, giving credit to the report of the spies rather than to the word of God. And imagining their condition desperate, they laid the reins on the neck of their passions and could keep no manner of temper. Like foolish froward children, they fall a-crying. Yet they know not what they are crying for. It would have been time enough to cry out when the enemy had beaten up their quarters, and they had seen the sons of Anak at the gate of their camp. But those that cried when nothing hurt them deserved to have something given them to cry for. And as if all had been already gone, they sat down and wept that night. Note, unbelief or distrust of God is a sin that is its own punishment. Those that do not trust God are continually vexing themselves. The world's mourners are more than God's. In the sorrow of the world works death. Secondly, how they flew in the face of their governors, murmured against Moses and Aaron, and in them reproached the Lord. Verse 2, the congregation of elders began to discontent, but the contagion soon spread through the whole camp, for the children of Israel murmured. Jealousies and discontent spread like wildfire among the unthinking multitude, who are easily taught to despise dominions and to speak evil of dignities. They looked back with a causeless discontent. They wished that they had died in Egypt, with the firstborn that were slain there, or in the wilderness, with those that lately died of the plague for lusting. See the prodigious madness of unbridled passions, which make men prodigal even of that which nature accounts most dear, life itself. Never were so many months spent so pleasantly as these which they had spent since they came out of Egypt, loaded with honors, compassed with favors, and continually entertained with something or other that was surprising. And yet, as if all these things had not made it worth their while to live, they wish they had died in Egypt. And such a light of opinion they had of God's tremendous judgments executed on their neighbors for their sin, that they wish they had shared with them in their plagues, rather than run the hazard of making the descent upon Canaan. They wish rather to die criminals under God's justice than to live conquerors in his favor. Some read it, "Oh, that we had died in Egypt, or in the wilderness. Oh, that we might die." They wish to die for fear of dying, and have not sense enough to reason that the poor lepers, when rather than die upon the spot, they ventured into an enemy's camp. "If they kill us, we shall but die," 2 Kings 7, verse 4. How base were the spirits of these degenerate Israelites, who rather than die if it come to the worst, like soldiers on a bed of honor, with their swords in their hands, desire to die like rotten sheep in the wilderness. Number 2, they look forward with a groundless despair, taking it for granted Ver 3, that if they went on, they must fall by the sword, and pretend to lay the cause of their fear upon the great care they had for their wives and children, who they conclude will be a prey to the Canaanites. And here is a most wicked, blasphemous reflection upon God himself, as if they had brought them here on purpose that they might fall by the sword, and that their wives and children, those poor innocents, should be a prey. Thus do they, in effect, charge a God who is love itself, with the worst of malice and eternal truth, with the basest hypocrisy, suggesting that all kinds of things he had said to them and done for them hitherto were intended only to decoy them into a snare and to cover a secret design carried on all along to ruin them. Daring impudence! But what will not that tongue speak against heaven that is set on fire of hell? The devil keeps up his interest in the hearts of men by insinuating to them ill thoughts of God, as if he desired the death of sinners and delighted in the hardships and sufferings of his own servants, whereas he knows his thoughts toward us word, whether we know them so or not, to be thoughts of good and not of evil, Jeremiah 29:11. Thirdly, how they came at last to this desperate resolve that, instead of going forward to Canaan, they would go back again to Egypt. The motion is first made by way of query only, verse 3, were it not better for us to return into Egypt? But the ferment being high, and the spirits of the people being disposed to entertain anything that was perverse, it soon ripened to a resolution. Without a debate, verse 4, let us make a captain and return to Egypt. And it is lamented long after Nehemiah 9:17, that in their rebellion they appointed a captain to return to their bondage, for they knew Moses would not be their captain in this retreat. Now, number 1, it was the greatest folly in the world to wish themselves in Egypt, or to think that if they were there it would be better with them than it was. If they dare not go forward to Canaan, yet better be as they were than go back to Egypt. What did they lack? What had they to complain of? They had plenty, and peace, and rest. They were under a good government, had good company, had the tokens of God's presence with them, and enough to make them easy even in the wilderness, if they had but hearts to be content. And where were they thus eager to go to better themselves? To Egypt. Had they so soon forgotten the sore bondage they were in there, would they be again under the tyranny of their taskmasters, and at the drudgery of making brick? And after all the plagues which Egypt had suffered for their sakes, could they expect any better treatment there than they had formerly, and not rather much worse? In how little time, not a year and a half, have they forgotten all the sighs of their bondage, all the songs of their deliverance, like brute beasts, mind only what is present in their memories, with the other powers of reason or sacrifice to their passions. We find it threatened in Deuteronomy 28:68, as the completing of their misery, that they should be brought into Egypt again, and yet this is what they wish for. Sinners, or enemies to themselves, and those that walk not in God's counsels, consult their own mischief and ruin. Number 2, it was a most senseless, ridiculous thing to talk of returning there, through the wilderness. Could they expect that God's cloud would lead them, or his manna attend them? And if they did not, the thousands of Israel must unavoidably be lost and perish in the wilderness. Suppose the difficulties of conquering Canaan were as great as they imagined, those of returning to Egypt were much greater. In this, let us see the folly of discontent and impatience under the crosses of our outward condition. We are uneasy at that which is, complain of our place and lot, and we would shift. But is there any place or condition in this world that is not something in it to make us uneasy if we are disposed to be so? The way to better our condition is to get our spirits into a better frame, and instead of asking, were it not better to go to Egypt, ask, were it not better to be content to make the best of that which is? Number 2, the folly of apostasy from the ways of God. Heaven is a Canaan set before us, a land flowing with milk and honey. those that bring up ever so ill a report of it cannot but say that it is indeed a good land, only it is hard to get to it. Strict and serious godliness is looked upon as an impracticable thing, and this deters many who begin well from going on, rather than undergo the imaginary hardships of a religious life. They run themselves upon the certain fatal consequences of a sinful course, and so they transcribe the folly of Israel, who when they were within a step of Canaan would make a captain and return to Egypt.